Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanz in Washington, working on this program, The Remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Tuesday, February 22, 2022. Seven journalists were detained by the South Sudan's National Security in Juba.
The honorable members of this National Legislative Assembly has no right to call the conference before they manifested it to the leadership of the assembly.
And lawmakers from the Rueng administrative area are calling on the government to release civilians detained at military facilities.
They were arrested and taken to the military barracks. I talked to the commander of the army there to release the people, but he refused.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Seven journalists were detained by the South Sudan National Security Service during a press conference at the National Legislative Assembly's premises. John Agany Deng is the chairperson of the Information Committee at the National Legislative Assembly. He says journalists are free to do their work in South Sudan.
Who called the press conference?
The honorable member representing Tribeid County at the National Legislative Assembly.
The honorable members of this National Legislative Assembly has no right to call the conference before they manifested it to the leadership of the assembly. That is not part of the law. So if they have done it after me, because I have gone for a workshop and I was not informed of any conference, if they did it after me, it is their under responsibility. I have nothing to answer.
In a situation where if the conference is not approved, should journalists be arrested for covering it?
The journalists are not there to respond to any honorable MP without making a prior consultation to their leadership. It is not part of the law. So for me, I have no knowledge because I was in for a workshop and I only heard that the incident, it was an illegal activity. By the way, it was not part of the parliamentary procedure. So any member of parliament has no right to summon any person in Sudan else to make a press conference without the prior consultation.
I understand what you are saying. I understand the standard procedure, the National Legislative Assembly. If a journalist is called, is it a crime?
It is a crime.
Under which penal code?
It is a crime because the information is not... Listen to me. The information under the conduct of business must be classified. You are not here to respond to anybody calling anywhere. In this country, there are rules of laws and they must be followed like any elsewhere in the world.
I understand, but what I'm asking you is under which penal code?
Don't question me, because this is procedurally correct.
My dear,
you can't question what I'm telling you.
I am not questioning you. I am also bringing the law right on
your
face.
You are questioning me. I told you that it is unprocedural to come to attend any classified information.
But calling
Full stop. That is all.
Calling for a press conference is not a classified information. Your member of parliament has the freedom of speech.
There is no any person in the constitution where in the context of business. And by the way, as a member of parliament, you are there to classify your information. You are there. You are not there to call any random press conference, which you cannot justify. Where is it written by law that the member of parliament could call a conference? Where is it written?
The South Sudan Constitution has a freedom of speech enshrined in it.
Yeah, that is true. But does it mean that you have an arbitrary freedom of speech without being classified? That freedom of speech must be classified and it must be followed by the law which governs the country. You cannot actually hold a press conference which will raise an anarchy in the country.
If it is holding people responsible, your colleague who called the press conference should be the person arrested, not the journalist who came to attend the press conference.
The journalists are not supposed to come to the assembly unless they are fully called.
But your colleague called them.
If they come without being, and even myself, who is the spokesperson of the assembly, I was not informed of any press conference. I was not even informed. I just heard it from you.
In case a press conference is held at the assembly and you decide that it's illegal, Why would you arrest journalists who just came to attend it? They were called.
Why did they come to the assembly without being informed?
But they did
Why
not
did
organize.
They come to the assembly without being informed officially?
They did not organize the press conference.
Who organized it?
One of your colleagues organized it. It's
by
like,
the way, by the social ethics, by social ethics of journalism, you must procedurally respond to a classified information. You are not there to broadcast any information.
If the information is classified, we say it's classified. We do not broadcast classified information. I mean, we are responsible journalists. We know what we are doing.
I'm saying, let me put this argument into rest. You know, the conference, or I don't know, the press conference, which was called by an MP, is an illegal procedural process. And I'm not part of it. You call them, those who did the conference, and talk to them.
My question still remains.
I cannot respond to something which is illegal. This is an illegal process in the assembly. I'm the right person to speak in the name of the assembly. If there is any conference at all, I have to be informed.
Correct.
As we speak, I was not informed because I went for a certain business.
Correct. I understand your position on this issue and the procedures in the Legislative Assembly. But my question remains that journalists were called there and they were arrested instead of the person who organized the press conference.
They were called there by who? They were called there by who?
By your colleague who is representing Tibet County.
Who give my colleague right to call the journalist?
That should be a question to your colleague, not to the journalist.
No, you answer it because you qualified now the information that they should have been having right to come to the assembly.
No, but this
when the information they are asked for is not classified.
I don't represent your colleague who represents Tibet County.
And you are even speaking to the wrong person, by the way.
Well, you speak for the parliament and this thing happened in the parliament.
Yes, I was a speaker of parliament. Was I informed of this press conference?
That's John Agandeng, the chairperson of the Information Committee at the National Legislative Assembly. He was speaking with me from Juba. Members of Parliament representing the Rouen Administrative Area at the National Legislative Assembly are calling for the release of four civilians who were detained at a military facility in the area. Dengaideng has more for VOA from Bor.
MP Batari Amonyoro, who represents the Rouen Administrative Area in the National Parliament, says the trouble started when Peter Dao Chopkwir, chief administrator of the Rouen Administrative Area, illegally created two new counties of Abiemnom East and Abiemnom West last year. Amonyoro says the move divided citizens within the indigenous community. She says the government arrested Francis Kwalwal, Arop Ngol Nyal, Majunga Jang, and Arop Machar Dao, all of whom opposed the formation of new counties. Amonyoro says last week the four civilians were transferred from police custody to a military detention facility at the SSPDF Division 3 headquarters.
They were arrested and taken to the military barracks. I talked to the commander of the army there to release the people, but he refused. And Peter told the commander that they are rebels. They want to rebel in the area, and that is not true. The people are civilians, and they should not be detained in a military barracks.
Moiror says the detention of civilians at a military barracks is illegal and has demanded that all four be released immediately.
Civilians, you have no power to defend them in your place. But I reject it. That's why I'm going to the media to tell the nation what is going on in Abiemnom, because I cannot leave my people to be mistreated.
Arop Kokir, another MP who represents the Rouen Administrative Area, also called on Rouen authorities to release the detained civilians. He says if they committed a crime, they should be charged with an offense, but not held at a military barracks.
There are authorities in the area. There are commissioners, the government of administration of the area, and the police, and they are all there. If there is anything like that, then they should give it to the police to handle it. They took the civilians to the army, and that is not good.
Manuel Chong, the security advisor in Rouen Administrative Area, asserts that the four men arrested are members of the armed forces who have been inciting civilians against the government.
Those people were soldiers. One is a member of the police. Another one is from wildlife. They were inciting the civilians, so they were arrested and transferred to the military detention facility. It is this issue of the county. The people don't want this name or that, and why create another county? That was the politics that they involved themselves in.
John says the suspects are being investigated and will be released if they promise to stop getting involved in politics and inciting civilians. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
Officials from Lakes and Warrap states are condemning intercommunal violence which left 9 people dead over the weekend. The Warrap State Information Minister is calling on the two communities to remain calm and allow authorities to track down and arrest the perpetrators. William Sande Mabor reports for VOA from Rumbek.
Officials say armed young men from Maper Town of Lagos State, Rumbek North County, attacked the Amadiao cattle camp in Tony East County of Warrap State at dawn on Saturday, killing 4 people. Later that day, armed young men from Tony East County carried out a revenge attack in Rumbek North County, killing 5 people, raiding hundreds of cattle, and destroying government facilities. Acting Rumbek North County Commissioner Isaiah Akol Mathiang confirms the 9 deaths. He says at least others were wounded.
Huge number of armed youths from Ranjang surrounded Rumbek North and burned down houses, shops and government facilities and killed 5 people and 11 people wounded. Also on the side of the attackers, 4 people were killed and then they returned to Warrap State.
Lagos State Police spokesperson Major Elijah Mabor Makwaj says the fighting continued all day. He says the number of casualties could rise because the fighting spread to cattle camps and parts of Maper Town.
The fighting escalated from the outside the county headquarters and escalated up to the town, whereby all shops in the town were burned into ashes, and the fighting continued until 5 hours. Attackers were repelled back or were pushed out from the town. According to reports of casualties, about 8 people were killed, wounded 4 policemen and 4 civilians. These 4 policemen were attacked at their stations, and unfortunately this morning I received another report that among the 4 wounded, 1 passed on, succumbed from the wound he sustained.
Makwai says the attackers also broke into Rumbek North County Prison and released 13 inmates, some of whom are believed to be from Warrap State and were arrested for theft and other offenses. Warrap State Information Minister Ring Adingdeng condemned the violent attacks, including the destruction of government facilities in Rumbek North County of Lagos State and the cattle raid in Tony East County of Warrap State.
I would like to condemn on behalf of Warrap State government to condemn this cattle raising, and I'm appealing to both communities to remain calm and ask the both government to work hand in hand to trace out those who have done this attack, Warrap, and also those who came from the state, so that we bring them together, and who made this attack will be held accountable.
Tony East County Commissioner John Deng Akongshan also condemned the violence and urged both communities to adhere to the Makwaj Peace Agreement signed by both communities in November last year.
I therefore condemn this conflict and act by extending the fight into the government facilities, and I therefore totally want these criminals from both sides, hoping that the life is all about looting or raiding of cattle, that the abuse of responding to that extent of destructing the government facilities that belong to nobody. However, I appeal greatly to both communities, chiefs, politicians, to cooperate and cease out of this senseless and violence. We avoid it.
Lagos State Acting Information Minister William Koji Kirjok also condemned the attacks and urged both communities to refrain from revenge attacks and cattle raids.
Of course, the incident situated between the community of Lonjang and Pakam of Rumbek North, it will not be allowed to continue. It has to be brought to an end. Something has to be done about it. So the two governments must come together, find a way forward of how these disputes are brought to an end, the issue of raiding. But what is very unfortunate here, going to the extent of burning houses, burning facilities, they are very unfortunate. Of course, that is not good.
Authorities from both the states say CAM has returned to Tony East and Rumbek North counties. So far, no one has been arrested. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabur in Rumbek Lake State.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, African Union officials are in Juba to check on the progress of the 2018 peace agreement. Find out why after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday Health segment, we look at the importance of tree planting. The inspiration for Africa's Great Green Wall project to plant trees across the continent to hold back the Sahara Desert came partly from Burkina Faso. While the project faces challenges and criticism, it still has champions who are teaching the next generation the importance of planting trees. Henry Wilkins reports from Ouagadougou.
In the arid savanna of Burkina Faso's countryside, for decades, local people have understood the importance of planting trees to protect their livelihoods and hold back the encroaching desert. Few more so than El Hadji Salafu Wadrago, who has run a business planting and nurturing the famous baobab trees for more than 40 years. He says at first he started producing mango trees, but quickly realized lots of people were already doing that. So having a baobab at home and having noticed that people came to the house all the time to ask for the baobab leaves for food, he thought to himself, why not produce it in large numbers, deciding it would be a big help to people. The baobab tree's fruits, leaves and bark are used by some Burkinabe people as an important food source and for medicinal purposes. Thomas Sankara, the country's president from 1983 to 1987 and a national hero for many in Burkina Faso, envisioned planting the baobab and all kinds of trees across the continent. He once said, step by step, tree by tree, we will create this great park of 10 million trees. Some say Sankara was the inspiration for the UN and World Bank-funded Great Green Wall, a projected 8,000-kilometre-long band of trees stretching from the southern edge of the Sahara Desert. Backers say the project will help fight the effects of climate change, drought, famine, conflict and migration. But critics like Giorgio Vasciano, an associate professor at the University of Milan, say after 15 years, the project is only 4% complete, with just 10 years left before its completion deadline.
I can see three different kinds of problems. One from the social point of view, obviously from the implementation point of view, and then the ecological consequences and feasibility. Territory that is going to be planted with trees is currently a conflict area, either with traditional military conflicts or with terrorism.
Backers of the project, like Remy Hemerick of SOS Sahel, say it is making gains and uniting communities.
So we have been working on the ground, mostly with rural communities, rehabilitating land and forest, also empowering local communities to get involved into the economic system. So we really believe that the Great Green Wall is one of the solutions for the Sahel region.
Wadrago's son, who is taking on the family business, believes tree planting is essential for the future too.
Donc, je l'accompagne sur toutes les terrains qui est possible.
He says he accompanies his father everywhere, who shows him how to take care of the trees, and particularly the baobabs, which are a symbol of Africa, he adds. He also said it's important to save nature because, in his words, saving nature is saving the life of man. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Southwest Burkina Faso.
Australia has reopened its borders to double vaccinated international tourists. They have been shut out since March 2022 under some of the world's toughest COVID-19 measures. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
9 million foreign visitors used to head to Australia each year. But now the tourism industry is hoping that 2 years of disruption are coming to an end. More than 50 international flights were scheduled to land in Australia on Monday as its borders reopened. Prime Minister Scott Morrison said the country was going from COVID cautious to COVID confident when it comes to travel. While many tourism businesses share his enthusiasm, some believe the recovery will be slow and that it will take time for overseas visitors to return in large numbers. Margie Osmond, the chief executive of the Tourism and Transport Forum, an industry body, says as Australia tries to attract overseas visitors, it will face competition from other countries.
Rebuilding confidence is critical, whether it's here domestically or whether it's about global travel. We are going to have to do considerable work to make people feel comfortable about coming here again. But what complicates it even more, massively competitive global marketplace now. Everybody wants that leisure tourist back.
Australia's largest markets for inbound tourism were China and New Zealand, two countries that still have strict COVID-19 travel controls. Tourism Australia, the country's official marketing agency, has said it has plans to attract visitors from Britain, Europe, the United States, Japan, and Korea. Prime Minister Morrison said international travellers who came to Australia would have one of the greatest experiences they could ever imagine. Under current rules, foreign visitors must have received 2 doses of a COVID-19 vaccine. Australia has recorded about 2.7 million coronavirus infections and 4,900 deaths since the start of the pandemic. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
A 15-member delegation from the African Union Peace and Security Council arrived in Juba Tuesday to check on the status of the 2018 peace agreement. The head of the delegation says her team is in South Sudan's capital to assess some of the challenges facing the implementation of the deal. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Jane Kamau, who is heading the African Union delegation and is president of the African Union Peace and Security Council for the month of February, says the African Union wants the South Sudan transitional government to meet the deadline for carrying out key tasks before the transitional period ends a year from now.
The peace agreement was about bringing peace and stability, and there was a specific time frame. So within the period that has passed and what is left, we want to know what are the challenges, what are the key support areas that we need to put more emphasis in to ensure that we meet the deadline.
Several parts of the peace deal, including chapters that deal with transitional justice, accountability and reconstruction, have largely remained unimplemented. Kamau says the AU delegation's visit to Juba is aimed at pushing the parties to do more to implement the remaining tasks.
Talk to a cross-section of stakeholders from government, from civil society, political parties, some of the development partners, just to get a sense of how the peace process is going, where are the challenges, and how can the Peace and Security Council, and indeed the African Union, continue to work and support South Sudan during this political transition.
In a statement released today, the Revitalized Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or RJMEC, says while some progress has been made on implementing the agreement's chapter on governance, much remains to be done. The Peace Monitoring Body says the Transitional National Legislative Assembly has yet to ratify several key pieces of legislation while state governments are not fully functioning, various forces of the parties are not unified, the Special Reconstruction Fund is not established, and millions of South Sudanese remain in refugee camps outside the country or in IDP camps. It added that public financial management reforms remain largely undone, the transitional justice mechanisms are not established, and the constitution-making process is not progressing as expected. The Peace Monitoring Commission says the permanent constitution process must be fast-tracked as it is a prerequisite for conducting elections at the end of the transitional period. The body says the new constitution represents democratization, the rule of law, and a stable South Sudan. Kamau says the team's mission is also to establish facts and strengthen the African Union's position in helping the parties implement the agreement.
The Peace and Security Council of the African Union is here for 3 days. At a historic moment when the government is celebrating 2 years in office, but also it's 6 years for the sixth visit by the Peace and Security Council to come and review the peace process here in South Sudan, to assess the achievements which have been made, look at the challenges, and really to provide solidarity and support to the people of South Sudan.
The Revitalized Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission says the unity government should dedicate financial resources for completing the much-delayed transitional security arrangements, especially the graduation and redeployment of the unified forces. The commission says a clear plan of action is needed to address the dire humanitarian situation in the country and the facilitation of the voluntary return of IDPs and repatriation of refugees. It is also calling for specific reforms that ensure free and fair elections are conducted next year at the end of the transitional period. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now end the show with Khalid and the song Aisha.
Comme si je n'existais pas. Elle est passée à côté de moi. Sans un regard, reine de Saba, j'ai dit Aïcha, prends tout est pour toi. Voici les perles, les bijoux, aussi au retour de ton cou, les fruits bien mûrs au goût de miel. Ma vie Aïcha, si tu m'aimes, Aïcha, regarde-moi. Oh, Aïcha, Aïcha, réponds-moi. Je dirai les mots, les poèmes. Je jouerai les musiques du ciel.
We've been listening to Khalid and the song Aïcha. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.